Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. You have probably heard of lawsuits over arguments and fights and gunshots and even spilled coffee, but what about nuclear bombs being dropped? We'll be speaking with our guest about that subject. He is Rick Wayman. He is from the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation. Rick, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you for having me, David.
It's great to have you. It's an incredibly important story that's not been heard enough about. To begin with, what is the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation?
Well, the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation is a nonprofit organization. We're based in Santa Barbara, California, and we work in the U.S. and internationally for the abolition of nuclear weapons and also to empower peace leaders.
Not too much suffering there, working in Santa Barbara, California. Beautiful place.
It's a good place to be, and we feel that being outside of the Washington, D.C. beltway really helps us to keep a focus on what our ideal is, not what is politically possible within the next 2 years with the Congress that we have.
An admirable approach that should be followed by hundreds of organizations I can think of. I won't name them all. So what is it that's been done in terms of filing a legal case against for damages from the dropping of nuclear bombs?
Well, actually, that's not quite what has happened. It's easy to think that might be what it's about, but let me explain in a little bit more detail. So back on April 24th of this year, the Marshall Islands filed 10 separate lawsuits. 9 of those lawsuits were in the International Court of Justice in The Hague, and those lawsuits are individually naming the 9 countries that possess nuclear weapons. So that's the U.S., Russia, the U.K., France, China, Israel, India, Pakistan, and North Korea. They also filed a separate lawsuit only against the U.S. in U.S. federal district court. And all 10 of these lawsuits are alleging breach of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And that treaty was signed and went into effect 44 years ago and requires negotiations for nuclear disarmament and an end to the nuclear arms race at an early date. We have seen neither of those things so far, and that's really what the Marshall Islands is after here. They're not after monetary damages, and all they're seeking with these lawsuits is what's called injunctive relief, which is the courts declaring that the nuclear armed nations must begin negotiation to eliminate all nuclear weapons. And also a key to that is ending the nuclear arms race now, which means stopping the modernization programs in the U.S. and many other nuclear armed nations. Some nuclear armed nations are just flat out building new nuclear weapons right now. All of that under these lawsuits must stop immediately.
So this is effectively asking parties to a treaty to comply with the treaty, but there is a certain sense in which the Marshall Islands have particular standing, at least morally, at least superficially, in bringing such a case. For people who might not know the details, tell us what the Marshall Islands are and where they are and what they have to do with nuclear weapons.
Absolutely. Well, you know, David, when you first mentioned that, you know, maybe they're seeking damages about nuclear bombs having been dropped, that is the unfortunate and very sad legacy of the Marshall Islands. It's a small country out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. There are about 60 or 70,000 people that live on the island. And from 1946 until 1958, the islands were used as a nuclear testing ground by the United States. The U.S. exploded 67 nuclear weapons in the Marshall Islands during that period. The biggest ones that the U.S. ever exploded were in the Marshall Islands. The biggest one was on March 1st, 1954. That was called Castle Bravo. And that test was over 1,000 times the explosive power of the bomb that leveled Hiroshima. The legacy of nuclear fallout and all the associated health problems, there are still quite a few islands that are uninhabitable. People who whose families had lived there for many generations have been forced off the land, forced to live in slum-like conditions in other parts of the island, and it's really a terrible legacy. But what they're doing here with these particular lawsuits are not about seeking compensation for those wrongs. There have been cases in the past, and there may be additional things in the future that come up around that. But what they're doing here is the people of the Marshall Islands know firsthand the devastation that nuclear weapons can cause, and they want to ensure that this never happens to anyone ever again. And the only way to ensure that is by enforcing the promise that was made by all the nuclear armed nations to go down to zero.
And so people were removed prior to this testing, but have been unable to return to those islands. Is that correct?
That's partially correct. Sometimes that was the case. Sometimes the U.S. did seek permission in advance. There were other cases where a bomb was exploded. The wind apparently had shifted or had done unexpected things, and fallout was brought to islands where there were people actively living. In some cases, it took a few days for them to be evacuated. So there was a great deal of exposure that should not have ever happened.
So the case that's being made is that the United States, among others, along with eight other nations, apparently, is in violation of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. We've grown accustomed to hearing that nations for which there's no evidence they even have nuclear weapons, like Iran, are violating that treaty. It sounds like the U.S. may be in no position to make such accusations, even if they were true.
So the Non-Proliferation Treaty, there was really a grand bargain that is at the base of that treaty. And what that is that the countries that have nuclear weapons have agreed to get rid of them. And the countries that do not have nuclear weapons have agreed not to acquire them. The U.S., among others, regularly accuses Iran of being in violation of the treaty through their pursuit of uranium enrichment programs and that sort of thing, and possibly at one point having pursued a nuclear weapon capability. But yeah, the P5, which is the U.S., Russia, U.K., France, and China, they are absolutely. I mean, the lawsuits are accusing them of themselves being in breach of the treaty. Specifically, it's Article 6 of the treaty, which requires the end to the nuclear arms race and nuclear disarmament.
How quickly does it require that?
Well, that's part of the tricky thing. There's language in that article that says at an early date. Now, I'm 35 years old. This treaty is 44 years old. So by no stretch of my imagination is 44 years at an early date. But not only that, all of the countries right now that are modernizing their nuclear arsenals, the U.S. included, are planning what nuclear weapons they're going to be fielding 50 and 60, 70 years into the future. There's no plan at this point by any of them to be at a world free of nuclear weapons, and that is absolutely unacceptable. And I don't know anyone who would consider 44 years, 60 years, 80 years to be at an early date.
Yeah, as a 44-year-old, I certainly wouldn't. What is the state of the U.S. nuclear arsenal? Is it expanding, changing, being swiftly eliminated? Where does it stand?
Well, one of the arguments, well, really the only argument that the U.S. has put forward up to this point in response to the lawsuit, and it was just a statement from the State Department, is that, look, we've reduced our strategic nuclear stockpile by 80 to 85% since the height of the Cold War. So we've gone down from many, many, many thousand to just a few thousand. You know, so that is a pure numbers argument right there. But my response to that is you can eliminate a few thousand nuclear weapons that are very expensive, militarily unusable, but if with your remaining few thousand, you're modernizing so that they have new military capabilities, so that they are going to be usable for many more decades, that goes against the spirit and the letter of the treaty. Having reduced by 85% from a huge number, that still leaves a huge number, and it's really unacceptable that they think that is an effective argument.
We are speaking with Rick Wayman from the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation. There is a website about this project called nuclearzero.org. Go to nuclearzero.org and check it out. Rick, what about a nation like Israel that has nuclear weapons but hasn't signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty? Does that get it out from under being sued for compliance with the treaty?
That's a great question, David, and that was actually... There was an Israeli ambassador who was questioned about this by the media pretty much immediately after the lawsuits were filed, and that was his claim. He said, oh, well, we're not a part of that treaty, so it has no relevance to us. And the Marshall Islands and the legal team working on this case clearly had thought that through in advance. And what they've done is they've brought the cases in the International Court of Justice against Israel, India, Pakistan, and North Korea, the four countries that are not part of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, they've brought these cases under what's called customary international law. So even though they're not officially part of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, the fact that it's been around for 44 years is one way that the Marshall Islands is arguing that it falls under customary international law. But also the International Court of Justice back in 1996 made a ruling that there exists an obligation to negotiate and bring to a conclusion nuclear disarmament in all its aspects. So they didn't, in that ruling, they did not say there's an obligation for countries that are part of a certain treaty. They said there exists an obligation, period. So that includes all nations of the world.
So four nations are being asked to comply with customary law and five nations in addition to comply with the specific treaty that they're parties to.
Yes, that's right.
And so there are nine cases, you said, at the International Court of Justice and one in U.S. courts. How, starting with the ones at the International Court of Justice, how do you expect those to fare, and what is the timeline for developments?
Well, the first thing is that the Marshall Islands would not have filed these cases if they didn't think that they have a good chance of prevailing. And they strongly believe that. The legal team has been putting in countless hours of pro bono work on this. And of course, they wouldn't be spending their time on a case that they thought was a loser. They truly do believe that the right side is going to prevail on this. In terms of the timeline, countries have about 3 months to respond to the application at the international court. There are a number of countries around the world that do not accept the jurisdiction of the international court. That includes the U.S., among others. So the only three countries that are being sued that do, under all circumstances, accept the jurisdiction of the international court are the UK, India, and Pakistan. So those three cases in the international court are definitely going to be heard. The other six countries, they're invited to accept the jurisdiction of the international court specifically for this case, and we hope that they will. If they're so convinced that they're on legally sound ground by continuing to possess nuclear weapons and pursuing what they call a step-by-step approach for nuclear disarmament, then we believe that the courts should be able to decide. We want the arguments to be out in the open, and we want countries to talk about this in public, on the record, and be transparent about what their plan is for achieving zero nuclear weapons and when it's going to happen.
It's interesting that the UK is also now being investigated by the International Criminal Court for possible crimes in Iraq, as if the war itself were not a crime, and the US is not. That the UK has sort of a junior partner in militarism, with the US having one foot in the camp of international law, seems to take the brunt of enforcement, while the U.S. Tends to get off. Doesn't seem fair.
I mean, I think on the one hand, it shows us perhaps why the U.S. is so insistent upon not respecting the jurisdiction of international courts. But also, in the case of the U.K., it shows that you can't flout international law forever and expect to get away with it. Eventually, you're going to be held accountable, and that's what's happening now. In terms of the timing, I mean, it's a double whammy for them in terms of the International Criminal Court on the Iraq cases and the International Court of Justice case on nuclear weapons. But you can't expect to get away with these things forever.
Well, I hope that's right. Can other nations other than the Marshall Islands join their effort, send friend of the court briefs, take a stand in favor of enforcement of this treaty?
Absolutely. There are a number of ways for countries to get involved, and there are a number of countries that we're currently in talks with in the hopes that they will, in fact, join. In terms of the international court, there are a couple ways to get involved. One is by filing essentially parallel lawsuits, so even using similar or the exact same language as what the Marshall Islands has done. And they could also join on as interveners, which is just lending their voice to the cases in a slightly different way. In terms of the U.S. case, in U.S. federal court, countries can quite easily sign on to that, and we are hopeful that others will, but it's not necessary. These cases can and will go forward with just one plaintiff if that's the way that it needs to be.
And so why the U.S. in particular for a domestic case, and what are the expectations there?
Sure. Well, one thing is that there are certain arguments that can be raised against the U.S. In domestic court that cannot be raised in international court, including the U.S. Constitution, and which says that international treaties that have been ratified by the Senate are the supreme law of the land. So that's one thing that could not be raised in the international court, even if the U.S. were to accept jurisdiction of the international court for this case. And that is really the other reason why the Marshall Islands wanted to bring a case here in the U.S. is quite possible that the U.S. will just refuse to have the case heard in the international court. And the U.S. has a very specific moral, in addition to their legal responsibility, to be a leader on eliminating nuclear weapons. And the Marshall Islands wants to ensure that that's going to happen. So Tony DeBroom is the foreign minister of the Marshall Islands. And I asked him the other day what it is, why it is that they were willing to sue essentially their best friend, the U.S., for all the damage that has been done in the past, and the continuing militarism that is manifesting itself in the Marshall Islands. The U.S. is a good friend to the people of the Marshall Islands in terms of economic aid and ensuring a lifeline at this point economically. And what Tony said is we're not trying to be adversarial with these lawsuits. We're trying to be a good friend. And what good friends do is call each other out on their bad behavior. If a friend is behaving in a self-destructive way or in a way that threatens the well-being of other people, a true friend is going to step in and intervene and make sure that they change their ways. And sometimes, if you have a friend who has an alcohol or drug problem, it's not received well at first, but it's something that a good friend needs to do, and that's really the approach that they're taking here. They're not trying to create new enemies. They're trying to be a good friend and create a world where we can all live and survive and thrive.
It's an incredibly admirable approach on the part of the Marshall Islands and you guys. I wonder why you couldn't, or the Marshall Islands couldn't someday, if it seemed strategic, file a similar suit in the courts of any of the other eight countries, and why those other eight countries don't also have a moral responsibility to lead on this issue.
Oh, well, they absolutely do. What I meant by the U.S. having a moral responsibility to lead is that the U.S. is the only country in history that has used nuclear weapons in war against civilian populations. Most of these countries have conducted nuclear tests, which do obviously severely impact people in the surrounding area and around the world. But the U.S. Specifically is the one that has used them in wartime. But in terms of filing suits in other countries, I suppose that could happen at some point. I don't know the specific legal systems of all those individual countries. I would assume that it might be quite difficult to do that in North Korea, for example. But yeah, I'm sure that someone out there is thinking about that and might come forward with a proposal.
And you said that there's already been something of a response from the U.S. State Department. What has there been any other response to these suits?
There's been very little. We have an ally in the U.K. Parliament who asked the U.K. Foreign Minister an official question in Parliament about it just a couple days ago.
Who is that ally?
Yeah, the response was we're looking into it, and we will be defending ourselves robustly. That's essentially what he said.
What do you know who that was? Who said that?
Oh, the member of parliament who asked the question.
Yes.
Jeremy Corbyn.
Okay. Yes, I know him. That's admirable and typical of him.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he's a long time proponent of nuclear disarmament and has been active for decades in the UK on this issue.
So is this something that could be done with any treaty that people favor but is being routinely violated? I'm a huge supporter of a little-known, widely intentionally forgotten treaty called the Kellogg-Briand Pact, which goes back to 1928 and bans war, all war, nuclear or otherwise. Would it be possible for a nation or an organization or anyone else to file for injunctive relief and insist that the 85 nations that are party to that treaty stop fighting wars?
It's a great question. So one thing about this case that the Marshall Islands filed in the U.S. federal court is that it's unprecedented. No country has ever sued the U.S. in U.S. court for breach of an international treaty of any kind. So there's no precedent to go off of here. What we're hoping is that that this case will be successful and that it could open the door to enforcement of other promises that are made, like the treaty that you mentioned, and like many other treaties that are currently being violated. The big point here is why make treaties? Why agree to treaties if they're not going to be followed? If they're not worth the paper they're written on, you know, what's the point? So we've got to enforce the promises. We as a nation have to do the right thing. And that's what we hope is going to come out of it.
And in terms of the cases at the International Court of Justice, is there a slightly more precedent there?
Yeah, I mean, that's a more natural venue for countries to seek to hold each other accountable for things.
Well, I certainly hope it succeeds, not only for the sake of this case and for eliminating this incredible danger from the planet, but for the precedent of being able to enforce other treaties. What about the U.S. policy of potential first nuclear strike. Is that completely separate from the question of the Non-Proliferation Treaty and disarmament?
Yeah, that's not something that is specifically addressed in these lawsuits. The treaty does call for good faith negotiation, and my personal feeling is that one measure of showing good faith would be establishing a legally binding no first use policy, which would mean that under no circumstances would the U.S. use nuclear weapons first in any conflict. The powers that be who are in charge of these types of policies will argue that if we institute such a policy, that will weaken our nuclear deterrent. Countries will no longer really believe that we're crazy enough to use these weapons. And so therefore, they're going to take no option off the table. I mean, that's something that we hear all the time in relation to Iran these days, is that no option is off the table.
Which presumably as a threat of war is a violation of the UN Charter, which is also a treaty you're supposed to comply with.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really, this is no way to run the world. I mean, with 17,000 nuclear weapons in the world, they're going to be used at some point by accident or by design. And this record of the past almost 70 years since they've been used in war, it's not going to last forever. It's not a safe thing. Nuclear deterrence is it's a psychological theory. If it fails one time, it's too late for many, many millions of people. And that's not okay. That's not the kind of world that I want to live in. And that's not the kind of world that the vast majority of people want to live in.
Rick, with about 1 minute left, the website is nuclearzero.org. I think there's a petition there. What's going to happen with that? And what else can people do who want to help?
Sure. So at nuclearzero.org, there is a petition that people can sign. Right now, that petition is being used. We're giving regular updates to the leadership of the Marshall Islands with how many people are signing on. It's a way that you can add your voice of moral support to what the Marshall Islands has done, their courageous stand that they're taking. Ultimately, what we're going to be doing with those signatures is submitting them to the leaders of the 9 nuclear armed nations to let them know that not only does a country or multiple countries think that you need to comply with your legal obligation, so do all these people who have signed the petition. So I hope that all your listeners will go there, sign the petition, share it with friends and family on social media and by email. There's also some background on the Marshall Islands, background on the legal cases themselves, and for those who like that level of detail, you can even download the full text of the lawsuits themselves.
The website is nuclearzero.org. We've been speaking with Rick Wayman from the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation. Rick, thank you very much for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
David, thank you so much, and thanks for all your great work for peace.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.